Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 742, and we're recording this on January 16th, 2025. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm great, Martin. Happy to be joining you. Happy to be podcasting again. It's been a while. Full disclosure, we record that 2024 year in review, always the year in review, right before Christmas so that we can schedule it to come out at the appropriate time over the Christmas, New Year's happiness. Mm-hmm. And so It's been a while since we've sat together around the microphone.
Yeah. Do anything special over the holidays?
Well, actually, just last weekend, which was 2 weeks after the holidays, we went to Wisconsin and celebrated with our children there, who were very sick with the influenza bug over Christmas. My pastor's son missed all of his worship services, as a matter of fact, unfortunately.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It was tough stuff.
Something when I was in the pulpit, it was usually around Easter time where something hit me, just the kind of the rigor, you know, of it all, you know, kind of weakens the defenses, and then something strikes, and that's the way it goes.
So. Yeah, unfortunately. I'm always excited for this show and also a little bit overwhelmed because this is when I have to set up brand new compilation pages for the new year.
Right.
So one of the things that keeps my brain in order on the Wells Tech website, maybe I can share the site real quick for those watching, is the fact that we compile our ministry resources and our picks of the week on special pages. So you can reference those. And there are pages set up for each year that we've done this. And so especially for the picks of the week, I can tell how many years we've been podcasting because of the number of pages there. And so when I add 2025 to this list, which I'll have to do after today's show because we'll have new ministry resources, new picks of the week, then I have to go add 2025 to all, I guess, 18 now of these picks of the week pages and stuff. So you get the idea that it's a labor of love, but it keeps me organized and allows us to look back at what we've done over the years.
Maybe someday soon AI can do that for you, Sally. That seems like one of those tasks it should be able to do.
I like that idea. Mm-hmm. Very good thinking. Yeah. Pass it off.
All right. One of the challenges sometimes of a new year also is we kind of have a moment of panic. What are we going to talk about for another year?
Is there still technology and ministry happening?
And actually, this is kind of an anti-topic because I ran across an article from Ministry Tech, the Ministry Tech website, churchleaders.com is the URL. And they published a blog post entitled, "Is Your Technology Use Hurting Your Church?" And I think balance is good, and spending some time talking about maybe when not to use technology may not be such a bad conversation as well. And that's kind of an important part of anybody who's in charge of such things is to determine when, what, why, and then sometimes why not. And that's kind of what this article talked about. It focused a lot on worship technology and kind of overdoing that piece of it. But I thought we could maybe expand the conversation and talk to just kind of technology choices in general and when it's too much. And you know, maybe when it's appropriate too, but I think it's the start of a new year is a good time to do that.
Definitely. And if we've start with worship technology. That's what the article was on, you said. I can definitely attest to the fact that if screens are done well, they're a benefit. But if there's poorly developed slides or a slide operator who's not quite as attentive as they should be to advancing the slides at the right
Very
time,
disruptive, yeah.
it can be very distracting and frustrating for people that are having to then grab their hymnal and try to find the place to keep up with things since they can't rely and trust what's up on the screen. So definitely a place that you need to tread lightly and make sure that you have everything in place to do it well, or
Yeah.
don't do it at all.
So I'm assuming you have screens in your worship area.
We do, and we did at our previous congregation. So here in North Mankato, it's kind of central to the altar area. In New Ulm, at St. Paul's in New Ulm, it's over on the side, so not quite as front and center as the one here in St. Paul's, North Mankato.
Part of that's probably due to architecture too, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But especially with it being just right there front and center, it really commands your attention. And I personally, at first, I was kind of leery of it, but over time, I've come to really appreciate it because I can keep my head up and sing forward and respond forward instead of being buried in a book while the pastor's trying to lead us and help us to be focused on the words that we're saying and stuff. So I do love the screens now and really rely on them, except when I wear the wrong glasses and I can't see them. That's a different story.
Right. I'm going to be
So.
talking about a little bit of that in my pick of the week. The situation at our congregation is we've got that same screen on the left, and it is a projector that sits in the back, and it's good quality, and you know, there's no issue with lighting conditions. It's good at night or during the day. So that's great, and there's nothing preventing somebody from being able to see it clearly, other than that there's only one, and it's maybe sometimes the bottom of the screen is sometime obscured, let's say during a communion hymn sing, when people are standing up and walking in front of you, or a few rows, a few pews in front of you. So I think I'd agree with you that I think for a lot of congregations, the overall maybe the big resistors have lowered their defenses a little bit and have seen the benefit of it. And because I'm beginning to hear things like, well, we probably could use another screen on the other side to improve visibility and those kinds of things. So I think if done well, I think there's acceptance and I think people find usefulness as well. So that's a good thing. But as you mentioned, when tech fails or when it's not optimal, then it's, you know, front and center for everybody to see, and can be very disruptive to the worship experience. And also, if it fails, it's good to have plan B in place too. And I know some congregations do and some congregations don't.
So that's just one aspect of technology and ministry, though. And so, if we broaden that a little bit and kind of draw on our various experiences, I think a couple of different areas pop out as being dangerous territory that you want to make sure you're treading lightly again and doing it well. One in particular that's kind of sensitive to me is just being bombarded with emails. Like, I really don't like it when email is overused, or even if your congregation goes to texting. I trust that it's going to be important stuff and well organized and not just willy-nilly sent out right and left at someone's discretion. So I think our congregation does a good job with that by being very focused on the weekly newsletter that goes out by email. And it's well structured. It gives you some good reading. It's not overwhelming, but it most typically, I have an example that I'm sharing if you can see the screen or if you want to click the link later from our podcast notes. It kind of is divided into three sections. There's a look ahead at worship, and then a couple of announcement type sessions that talk about some important things that are coming up. And then there may be links to other things like council minutes or other announcements or whatever. It's not too long to read, and it's something that arrives very consistently in my inbox every Thursday morning. So I know what to expect, and I'm looking forward to it. I want to see what the topics of the week are. So I think that's really important, is just to consolidate things and not bombard people or kind of machine gun things out a whole bunch of messages or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you are also using fairly well-known and nice-looking technology like MailChimp,
mm-hmm.
Constant Contact's another one that provides great templates. And all the stuff is right there in the email. You're not clicking on an opening PDF attachments, those kinds of things. Usually, it's nice to put it all right there. So once you've got their attention, you're not risking taking them someplace else. But if they do want to dive deeper, you're providing links to, like you say, council minutes or whatever. But the main stuff is right there in front of them. So that's nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
Very nicely done. So I agree. Yeah, email needs to be used with caution. And again, the trying to consolidate that into a, you know, once a week, same time of the week, is always good. That consistency is a great idea. Email is also probably the primary communication tool for amongst volunteers. And that you'd think would be a fairly safe medium to communicate with everybody, but not everybody is in the same boat that they're reading. Let's say there's an expectation that people are reading email every day, and that's not the case. So I think you have to tread softly and determine, you know, with the people that are working together, what is the best way to communicate. Don't just assume that if you send an email to a published email address that they're going to see that within, you know, a day. You've got to, I think, take a little bit more measured approach and ask. And if that's the expectation, then that needs to be made clear too. Because waiting on somebody to respond or assuming that they've heard it, seen it, and then you not heard back creates friction, stress, strains everybody's you know, mentality and working kind of, I mean, they struggle to try and be comfortable and be happy about what they're doing if they think, hey, somebody's dropped the ball. So.
Yep.
Another thing, I had the church council, and I would love, love, love everybody to be able to get into a Google Doc, but that's just not reality. I mean, I can train them. Some of them are willing, but not able. So there's got to be workarounds there too. And you kind of have to just accept that, saying, well, I got to put an attachment in an email or drop it in their mailbox at church, or, you know, just kind of have to go with the flow. And you can't get overly stressed about it.
Yeah. And that kind of reminds you of like the 1 Corinthians verses where it talks about being all things to all people. And so maybe we need to bring it all so that the non-techie are covered as well. We got to make sure our bases are covered for everyone.
And you want them to enjoy their experience, you know, being a volunteer. And if tech is a stressor for them, boy, then don't overly rely on it and create that negative. So I think for us in technology, if you're a hammer, you think of everything as a nail, and or that the hammer's the only tool to use, which is technology, and that's hard to overcome if you live in technology world, right?
Seems so logical.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so maybe as you're taking on a new job or working with a new committee, or, you know, deciding to add screens in worship, whatever it may be, adding an e-newsletter or whatever, you have to ask, you know, why are we using technology and what's the goal and what does tech give us that non-tech doesn't, you know, is it really the solution or whatever? And then if you decide it is, then you have to take on the responsibilities of training and support, basically. Not my favorite things to be bogged down with or whatever, but if you want it to go well, then you have to bring people up to speed and continue to support them as they have challenges with it. So that's kind of the key to success there.
And I'd say a good rule of thumb is to start slow. Don't make big grand plans that are really hinging on the use of a technology or collection of technologies without kind of testing the waters first and see how it goes.
Just kind of
everybody will be happier.
Comes to mind that I've probably talked about this on the podcast maybe about a year ago, that I was going to take on the responsibility of organizing communion assistance. So we have three different services, and we also have a kind of an usher schedule that's variable. It's not that the ushers always usher on the first Sunday of the month at the 8 a.m. or whatever. It kind of varies. It's all over the place. But if they're ushering and I need communion assistance, they'd like to do it that same weekend, not be communion assistance on a separate weekend. So trying to coordinate all of that. When I took it on, I really thought, oh, this can be so automated and I can make this happen. And I've tried different things, and it pretty much always comes down to email and a long email thread of people responding. I had it out on a web page where they could just look anytime they wanted to. And I gave them a nice URL to that web page and things, but nobody looked at it. And so I ended up copying the things from the web page into the email and just going very, very basic. But that works for most people. There is one gentleman who only gets email through his work email and only Monday through Friday. So if I'm in a pinch and sending something Saturday morning, I know he's not going to see it, you know, and so it's challenging. But I started big, and I should have started slow, like you suggested, Martin. And that's where I ended up, was kind of with the slow solution, and it's working. So,
good.
Yeah.
Good, good. Ask, I think, have the conversation and say, you know, what's the best way to communicate? I found that some people who aren't emailers are texters. So I have a text thread with a group of our executive committee, and they seem to respond well to that, even those that are tech averse, but they've got a phone and they see that notification and they pay attention to it. So there's some limitations to that, of course. You can't really do much with attachments or longer messages, but gets the job done. So. All right. Well, that's if our listeners have any stories they'd like to share with us about tech and ministry, or the use of or lack of use, or tech fails,
or tech
we'd love
wins.
To hear about it. Yeah, our tech wins. We'd love to hear about it. So wellstech@wells.net's the email address, or as Sally mentioned, just go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment in the show notes there. So. All right, Sally, shall we move along?
We should. It seems
ministry
like a
resources.
Great time, yep, for ministry resources. And today we want to shine a spotlight on our friends at Forward in Christ magazine and their website, forwardinchrist.net. I want to say it's maybe 4 or 5 years ago that we had Nicole Balza on the show, and she debuted this brand new website that they had developed at that time. And it is so robust now. There's so much to it. And we just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of all the great stuff that's out here. So certainly you can see information on the current magazine that's been published right now. The January edition is out there. Just compilations of all kinds of different articles that are there. They even put together the top 10 most read online articles for Forward in Christ in 2024. So, and you can find links to all of those and things. Interestingly, I went down the list and was like, yeah, I read all of these. I think they're it's like a hidden treasure. If you aren't tapping into Ford and Christ magazine, and the great content that's there, you're missing out because there's some good stuff. And so,
Yeah, there's news, there's inspirational stories, there's devotions, there's FAQs and Q&As and all kinds of awesome stuff.
So, and they're on social media as well. So they have some feeds from their social media accounts as well there. So you can find them forwardinchrist.net or follow them on Facebook or Instagram, Twitter. All those different things are available here as well. Well, I shouldn't say Twitter. Facebook and Instagram are here. So good stuff.
Twitter doesn't exist anymore, by the way.
Oh, by the way, yeah,
Yeah.
forgot about that.
All right. Tips or picks of the week.
Yeah, and I'm still grabbing that screen share for those watching because I am in Edge browser and I learned something really cool about Edge that if you are interested in looking at an image on the page, you can actually hover your mouse over the image and click your control key twice, and the image will pop up in a larger version in a separate window. And so you can actually see the image more clearly or larger in that way. And if you want to, you could right click and get some right click options for the image as well. So pretty cool trick, but it does only work in the Edge browser. But really nice to be able to open up those images and see them more clearly. So again, all I did was hover my mouse and press control twice, and the image will pop up, even if it's Pastor Tony Schultz in his nightcap for a Kids Connection video. So whatever image you click, you double control click on, that will pop up large for you. Thought that
Cool.
was pretty cool.
Yeah, little bonus tip for you. If you hover over and there's a little ghosted icon, a visual search icon, but underneath that is a three dot menu that you can click on, which can also get you to that magnify image option that you were talking about. But you can also do some image editing. You can disable the image for this site or all sites. And then you've got some settings there too where you can control, some things about how that works. So if you wanted to turn that off altogether, you could do that, get rid of the icon, et cetera. So pretty cool. Edge, I think, is come a long ways from the old IE days. They've totally reinvented it, and truly it's a good Chrome competitor, especially if you're in Microsoft world. Integration is good and you have the ability to do some pretty cool things. So nice pick. I like it. My pick, recently, maybe not so recently, last 6 months or so, I've been noticing more eye strain lately as I sit in front of monitors. And, because of the nature of my work, I am in front of screens quite a bit, as many, many of our listeners, I'm sure, are as well. So I've been trying to figure out some things that I could do that could reduce that, because I know kind of what the cause is. It's, the screen time that I have. And other than reducing screen time, which isn't always an option, I asked my favorite AI assistant, which is Perplexity, which is a great use for AI if you're looking for, especially Perplexity, because they search multiple sources. I asked to avoid eye strain. I asked, what are some helpful suggestions to avoid eye strain when using monitors and screens? And one nice thing about Perplexity is it's front and center with all the sources that it has found that makes up its answer. So you can read kind of the summary of it, but also you can dive into the resources or the source articles that it comes from, including some very prestigious ones. So it's a lot of credibility here, but I felt some of these were worth sharing, and I'm sure some people are asking the same question, how can I reduce eye strain? And they put it into a number of different categories. One of them is optimize your workspace, of course. So where the screens sit in your environment is kind of, and where you sit is important. So adjusting screen position, place your monitor about an arm's length away, 20 to 30 inches. Position the top of the screen at or slightly below eye level. Tilt the screen slightly downward for optimal viewing. Improve lighting. Ensure your screen is the brightest lit source in the room. Reduce glare by closing blinds and adjusting office lighting. Use an anti-glare filter on your screen as necessary. And then optimizing screen settings. Match screen brightness to your surroundings. Set contrast to 60 to 70%. Increase font size for better readability. Figured that one out on my own. Reduce blue light. Enable blue light filters or night mode on your devices. You can actually get blue light filters on glasses now as well. Here's one that I'm going to try and practice more often. The 20-20-20 rule. Every 20 minutes, look at something 20 feet away for 20 seconds. So you're giving your eyes something more maybe normal, to look at. That sounds like a great tip. Step away from your screen for 10 to 15 minutes every 1 to 2 hours. Blink frequently. Make a conscious effort to blink more often to prevent dry eyes. Stay hydrated. Some things I wouldn't have maybe associated with dry eyes. Drink plenty of water throughout the day. I know you've got that one covered, Sally, with your 5-gallon jug right beside you there.
That's right.
Keep lubricating eye drops handy for relief from dryness. Visit your eye doctor regularly. Ask your eye doctor about computer glasses or anti-reflective coatings. God gave you two eyes, and that's all you got. So you might as well take care of them and treat them as good as you can. So thought that was great advice, and I'm going to start to following some of those tips, and hopefully that'll reduce eye strain. One thing that I initially searched on, well, what does dark mode versus light mode do for eye strain? And you'd think that that would be a good thing, but the science really isn't there to support that. There's a lot of debate about it, and it's more personal preference than anything that helps with eye strain. So at least that's what I read. So
Interesting.
that's my little contribution today, Sally.
Well, I just re recently went to the eye doctor. I mentioned if I don't have the right glasses on, I don't see the screen at church very well. And it seems like the glasses that I paid big bucks for, that are the three transition type lenses for far away, medium, and
Progressives,
close,
yeah.
they aren't working for me real great lately. And I've been more wearing these computer glasses. Computer meaning they're single lens meant for this
Optimized for like
distance.
4 feet or 3 feet or
Right,
whatever,
right.
yeah.
Well, it turns out my eyes got better, Martin. They have regressed.
Have heard that that does happen.
And I don't know, I might attribute it to just trying to see further away with these computer glasses. I've just gotten more comfortable in them. And I can tell when I get to church if I'm wearing them, the screen's just a little bit blurrier or whatever. But my eyes are definitely better. So I'm getting new progressive, is that what it's called? Progressive lenses that back off on my prescription, and I'm
Medium
a happy
distance, yeah.
girl.
Okay,
Oh.
awesome.
Something about me is improving with old age, so that's a good thing.
Yes, right. Only to be perfected in heaven, but still, we might as well do what we can here. So,
There you go.
yeah, and I would say probably single vision, computer glasses are much cheaper, I would
Yep.
think, than anything else.
And they're my favorite now. And that whole thing about, not using the computer screen, that's just like funny. You said,
Good luck,
to
right?
focus your eyes further away, a more normal distance. Nope, this is normal for me.
Right.
I
It
live my
is,
life
yeah.
in front of a screen. So,
It's true. So,
anyway.
all right. So I'll put a link to the Perplexity result. They allow you to share those searches. So take a look at that, and especially the sources. I think it'll be helpful for you if that's something that you're struggling with. Sally, let's move on to community news and feedback.
And first up, we heard from Michael Vlieger, who serves at Risen Savior here in Mankato, Minnesota. and who was catching up on some reading, I think over the Christmas break, and shared an article from Control Alt Achieve, which is called 17 Super Chrome Extensions. So we just talked about how great Edge is. And now we'll talk a little bit about Chrome extensions. I'm guessing you might find similar extensions with Edge, but I'm not sure if all of them are there. But I thought it was a really interesting article. It talks about extensions and kind of walks you through, holds your hand on installing extensions and pinning them and all kinds of different things that you can do with Chrome extensions. And then it gets into a big spreadsheet, 150 plus recommended Chrome extensions for teaching and learning, and just education in general. And he then highlights, it says here a selection of 15, but the article title says 17. So I think it's really hard to highlight just a few. You have to do a bunch. And I did a quick read through this section of the article, which starts about halfway down because he has all that great introductory content if you aren't familiar with extensions. So definitely read through that if needed. But yeah, looking at 17 different ones and things that they can do for you and assist you with, especially with the education idea in mind. And I read through all of them. I didn't read closely Michael's email until after I was done looking at the article. And actually, the one that I thought was the coolest was Save Image as Ping, because there have been some new image formats that aren't as easy to work with, like WebP
WebP, yep.
and HEIC is coming from the iPhone. And sometimes they aren't compatible with whatever image software you have or what you're trying to do with the images. And so having an option to save it as a ping in a right-click menu is a pretty nice option, I think. So that one kind of jumped out at me as my favorite in the list. And then I went back to Michael's email, and that was the one that he had mentioned. That one, and also Brisk Teaching, which I think is a whole suite of things that you can do to create resources, exemplars, quiz, lesson plans, slideshows, just doing all kinds of things, feedback on writing, AI chatbots, all kinds of things with Brisk. And Michael said that he had been exploring that as well. So if we have anybody out there in our audience that's using Brisk Teaching as something to assist from an AI perspective as well, we'd love to talk to you. You know, let us know what's working for you and what challenges you're having, or you know, if it's something that you would recommend. We'd really love to hear more about this particular product. And I'm sure if you look through the list, you can find a lot of other interesting extensions to use in your Chrome browser. So check it out. We'll have a link in our show notes.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that.
And then
Next one
just,
I can take, Sally, if you want.
yep.
Had a conversation with a pastor down in Florida whose church office computer crashed along with the WellsWare software that was on it. Some of you old timers probably remember WellsWare. Not an official Wells product, but Wells members or a Wells member built it. It's a church information system kind of application, financial management too, I think. But not around anymore, not supported. And he was looking for the install disks because, believes that he can get it back up, or somebody in his congregation believes he can get it back up running and retrieve that data. So I sent out a message to our Google Groups. Didn't hear anything back, so I thought I'd
Crickets.
promote it here and see if anybody in the in our listening audience knows where we can find some Wellsware CDs. I assume they're CDs. Maybe they're not. But if you've got them, let us know and we'll pass that along or take a look at that Google group entry. So appreciate any assistance people can provide.
And then one more from the Google group. Our friend James Karlovsky from Martin Luther College is looking to gather cell phone policies from Wells or even non-Wells schools. He's hoping to tap into those policies and put a request out there. And he had a couple of people share. I think he got like three or four responses to cell phone policies. I'm sure he'd appreciate more if anyone else has a cell phone policy to share. So just wanted to make mention of that request. And that's going
Awesome.
to wrap up community news for this week.
Great. If you have some, you have a question or want to provide feedback, we've already told you show notes page is the place to be. Again, there's a link there to this Google group page, so you can join that as well. And that's a fairly active community. And normally there's quick responses and some very knowledgeable people there. So. All right, Sally, I'm looking forward to the next time we get together because we're going to be joined by our friends Jason Schmidt and Rachel Reno.
Reno,
Reno,
just like the city.
formerly Rachel Feld. Congratulations to Rachel. And we're going to be talking about budgeting and procurement, things that have to happen to have some technology. So I'm looking forward to that conversation, and I'm sure both of them have some good experience with that. So I think that'll about do it, Sally. Thanks for joining me as usual. And thanks to all of you, our listeners and viewers, for tuning in. And hopefully you'll come back for episode 743. We certainly hope you do. Have a great day. Bye-bye.